Michelle Bachmann's Iowa political director says he's staying with her sputtering campaign despite last night's defection by another top staffer who went to Ron Paul. All eyes are on Iowa, with, as Gail Collins writes in the New York Times today, less than 8,000 minutes to go. Iowans are talking about Mitt Romney, the surging Rick Santorum, Stephen Bloom. Stephen Bloom. He is a professor of journalism at the University of Iowa and a transplant to the state. His article in The Atlantic is titled Observations from 20 Years of Iowa Life. It's not going over well. Now, a lot of people are questioning, as Stephen does, whether Iowa should be the first state in the nation to catapult a candidate through the primary process. It's largely white, rural, doesn't represent a more diverse America. But Professor Bloom goes further. He calls poor towns along the Mississippi some of the scuzziest he's ever been to. He says most Iowans up and leave to follow jobs. Those that stay are elderly waiting to die, those too timid or lacking in education to peer around the bend for better opportunities, an assortment of wastoids and meth addicts with pale skin and rotted teeth, or those who believe, like Little Orphan Annie, the sun'll come out tomorrow. Yeesh. Let's spend a few minutes today with a professor who in some ways has taken the spotlight from the candidates. Serious stuff. Stephen Bloom, we're not going to say where you are because you've received death threats.
Yes, that's right, Robin. You know, Iowa is, it's been my home for 20 years. I know Iowa. I've been to all 99 counties. I'm not a youngster. I've written 4 books about Iowa.
Well, in fact, I'm going to jump in to say one of those was about the Oxford Project. Photographer Peter Feldstein was on the program to talk about this project. He photographed Iowans over 20 years. You wrote the book, and it was beautifully received.
Yeah, and that book is a wonderful book that explores the secrets that a small rural Iowa town maintains. I interviewed 100 people and just sat them down and asked them to tell me their story. I chose to do this story in The Atlantic a little differently. I felt for 20 years of my 2 decades in Iowa that there was a story that wasn't being told, the opposite of Field of Dreams. It wasn't the rah-rah booster story that Iowans and many people like to believe. And I raised a very simple question about why Iowa is the first national referendum for presidential electability. Is Iowa really representative of much? 4 years ago, you know how many Republicans voted in the caucuses in Iowa? 119,000. You know who came in first? Huckabee. We rarely even hear of Mike Huckabee. But more importantly, the question is Iowa really representative of anything except a small rural state in what's derisively called flyover country? It's about 91% white. It's almost uniformly Christian. It is a state where there are a lot of hunters. Why should Iowa have such an inordinate amount of power in deciding who perhaps will be the leader of what's called the free world? So I raise these questions in the Atlantic piece. I must say all hell broke loose.
Well, yeah. Yes, it did. And the answer a lot of people had to your question, why Iowa, some would say, why not? Some of the things you described, everyone hunts, that, you know, people are largely Christian. Well, that represents a lot of America. 1 in 10 Americans hunt. I just came back from Pennsylvania. A lot of people hunting. There were live figures in the nativity scenes. These are a lot of things that you describe about Iowa as if that somehow sets Iowa apart. Some people would say, in fact, Iowa represents a large swath of the country.
But it doesn't represent anything at all connected to urban America. There are very few Chins, Romeros, Schwartzes in any Iowa city. You know, I've chosen to raise my family and to teach the students of Iowa at the University of Iowa for 20 years. Clearly, there's an awful lot I like about Iowa. But what I did was I believe I raised some uncomfortable truths, perhaps some unconventional truths. There are a lot of people who are not accustomed to that. There's a Midwestern sense of nice. And what I hoped to do in this story, I had hoped that people might shake their head, but they also might listen.
Well, let's tick through a couple of things that you've just said and points you make in the article. First of all, you just said there are not a lot of Chins. You know, that is a Chinese name. And in fact, Chinese students are being recruited to come to the University of Iowa. There's an office there that recruits Chinese students to come because so many Iowans are leaving the state.
Yeah, we call that the brain drain. Iowa has some great educational institutions. Iowa State, Upper Iowa University, Northern Iowa University and the University of Iowa, where I teach. But the fact is that if you get a good education from a land-grant university in Iowa, Iowans aren't staying in Iowa because there's no job for them, except perhaps to work on the family farm. And the family farm now has probably been leased to an agribusiness company.
Let's talk about some of the observations you make about the Iowan economy. You talk about factories closed. You tell a story about Maytag, which was bought by Whirlpool. I think workers hanging their boots in protest on the fence around the factory. You talk about immigrants coming to Iowa to work in the meatpacking industry, the slaughterhouse industry, which you point out was moved from the big cities. Tell us more about the impact of that shift.
Slaughterhouses were located in big cities. In the early 1970s, meat processors got an interesting idea, which was, hey, let's move the slaughterhouses right next to the corn-fed rich Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas beef. These are mostly non-union plants. Regulations are not as stringent. Really, the only thing you need for these jobs is a strong stomach and a strong back. You don't need to speak a word of English. Oftentimes, you don't need to be a U.S. citizen. There are other problems in Iowa that derive from that. Water pollution is terrible in the state of Iowa. Gambling has come with a vengeance to Iowa. There are 18 gambling casinos. And, you know, if you want to see people who are inhaling from an oxygen tank and alternately smoking cigarettes, just go into any one of those 18 gambling casinos. It's not a pretty picture. Anyway, let me take you on a trip to some of the southeastern Iowa cities that are along the Mississippi River. Davenport, Keokuk. Walmart has all but devastated the retail industry in Iowa. If there's anything in the storefronts, it's temporary garage sales. Iowa's population is just about flatlining. Iowa is losing a congressional seat. You know, what I wrote in this story, I believe, are a lot of uncomfortable truths that people just don't want to acknowledge as being part of their state. It's my opinion.
Well, it's not all opinion. I just want to jump in to say that, you know, it is fact-based. You point out that half of Iowa's 952 incorporated towns have populations of fewer than 500 residents. You mentioned the brain drain. Iowa has more high school graduates than 49 other states, but as you pointed out, it's the number two state in the country for losing college-educated youth. This isn't entirely opinion, but when it comes to the opinion part, you just talked about there being, you know, no jobs along these river towns. But then you write they're the scuzziest cities you've ever been to. Another town, I think it's Keokuk, you say, is a depressed, crime-infested slum. Can you see how people reacted to what sounded like heartless characterization?
I can see people seeing that. I don't think the role of a journalist is to write boosterism, but to generate the kind of comments, the kind of death threats that I and my wife and my son have gotten really is appalling to me. There's perhaps a sense of instead of machismo, it's statismo.
If you've just joined us, that's University of Iowa Professor Stephen Bloom, whose piece in The Atlantic is entitled Observations from 20 Years of Iowa Life. It's ignited a firestorm, not just from citizens who feel they've been caricatured as poor, rednecked Christian hunters, but criticism from Stephen's own colleagues, professors like Stephen Berry, Frank Durham, Judy Pollenbaum, who wrote, "We do not believe good journalism entails scathing attacks on powerless people." And Stephen Bloom, you know, there's another criticism. You do note in your article that the state is split between Democrats and Republicans. But some would say it's actually a progressive state. You know, Iowa is a leader in wind energy. Yes, it has conservative Senator Charles Grassley, but also uber liberal Tom Harkin. It was the second state to approve gay marriage.
It also removed three state justices because of their decision to make same-sex marriage legal.
This was an effort led by now presidential candidate Newt Gingrich.
In part, yeah.
Stephen Bloom, you are from San Francisco. You're a coastal person. You are Jewish?
Absolutely.
Is that part of your discomfort, a place in America that you in particular aren't comfortable?
No. I've lived there for 20 years. You know, a couple of local journalists asked me, if you don't like the state, then why do you stay here? And my response was, you know, I have arguments with my wife every once in a while, but that doesn't mean I want a divorce. This is where I live. This is where I teach.
Well, I was going to ask, do you not like the state?
No, there are wonderful things about the state.
Well, and there's one sentence I asked you about what felt like a heartlessness when you described some of the people that you described as left behind. But then there's another sentence elsewhere in the story that there's a sort of Disney-fied image of, you know, middle America, Iowa, these corn-fed, laughing farm children. But you say it belies the heartbreaking reality.
Yeah, I think it is heartbreaking. You know, I've taught a couple of thousand students. It's heartbreaking to have a wonderfully curious student who can't get a job in the state of Iowa, who has to leave the state.
Well, meanwhile, Sally Mason is the president of the University of Iowa, your boss. She said she was offended by your portrayal of the state. She mentioned how Iowans came out to help one another during floods. Do you think you're going to lose your job?
I don't think so, but I hesitate because I don't know. I'm a tenured professor. There are a lot of unpopular ideas that have been mentioned throughout history. I'm nothing near any of these people, and don't let anyone ever think that. But you know, there's a very famous artist who happens to be an Iowan whose name is Grant Wood. Your listeners know
sure.
him as the painter of American Gothic.
Right.
Grant Wood was hounded out of the University of Iowa because his work was considered too regional, too representational. Iowans didn't like it. If your listeners can imagine what American Gothic looks like, the dour woman, the long-faced man who happened to be a dentist, by the way, holding a pitchfork. There was a whole hullabaloo.
What, because they didn't like the way they were being portrayed?
Yeah, they didn't like the way they were being portrayed. Dour, parsimonious, not welcoming, open people. You know, it's interesting. I've done a story in the Chicago Tribune, one of the many stories I've done about Iowa. And the response was quick and immediate, and it was, this is a terrible painting. This is a terrible rendition. We're embarrassed by what Grant Wood has done. Well, I submit to you, I'm no Grant Wood, but what I represented in my Atlantic story perhaps carries some of the same characteristics of Grant Wood's picture. It is a parody. It is over the top. Absolutely. But there's a lot of truth to Grant Wood's painting of a farm couple. I know because I've been to those counties. I've interviewed those farm couples.
And so you're saying there's truth in yours as well.
As there's truth in Grant Wood's, not yeah. just American Gothic, but a whole bunch, you know, a whole oeuvre of work that he was scalded for.
Yeah.
It was too tough.
Stephen Bloom, journalism professor at the University of Iowa, who's, well, really stepped in it. His piece in The Atlantic, which we've linked to at hereandnow.org, questions why Iowa gets to have the first say on presidential candidates. Now, others have been asking the same thing. A candidate, John Huntsman, skipped Iowa. He told The Early Show today that Iowa picks corn, New Hampshire picks presidents. Then there's Gail Collins. She writes in today's New York Times, the Iowa caucuses are a ridiculous contest to select the candidate of a small group of Americans, older, whiter, and wealthier than others. But Stephen Bloom paints a picture of an Iowa in which educated residents leave. He calls river towns like Keokuk crime-infested slums, which is not going over well with people in Keokuk.
I think in a way he was profiling us to be like nasty river people that don't do anything at all kind of thing.
Well, I guess, I don't know, some things hold truth, but there's a better way of putting things. Like, he didn't have to be so blunt about everything, I guess. That gets a rise out of people.
That's Brianna and Tanner Walden, brother and sister Salvation Army bell ringers in Keokuk. They talked about Stephen's article on NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday, as did the director of Keokuk's Chamber of Commerce, Chuck Betts.
This is an opportunity. In fact, I'm throwing around the idea of hosting crime-infested slum days sometime in the future. Perhaps on Mr. Bloom's birthday will be the date of the celebration. And that's kind of a half-serious idea.
But it gets ugly. There are the white supremacist websites about Stephen Bloom. Here's a comment from one. Who cares what some overpaid, underworked, nutcase Jew school teacher thinks anyway? Stephen Bloom, before the break, you compared yourself to Iowan artist Grant Wood, whose painting of an Iowa farm couple, the American Gothic painting, was also hated by Iowans. But, you know, you write that Iowans are foreign to you. You know, people clinging to their fish fries and their tractor pulls and religion. And as we were saying before the break, even your boss, University of Iowa President Sally Mason, released a letter disavowing your comments, saying, you know, they caricature people.
The one thing that President Mason did not put in her letter was the most important, and it's the university is a marketplace of free ideas, and we will always hew to that. There was, in her letter, a disagreement with my story. Absolutely great. That's fine. And then the letter segued on to how great Iowans and the state of Iowa is. But President Mason didn't say anything about protecting the rights of minority opinions. That's the great tradition of our American universities. And that troubles me and it troubles other people. You know, I stepped into something. I realized that. But that's what I do with my books. That's what I do with all the writing I've done for many, many years. That's what journalists ought to be doing. That's what we do. There's a reason to write about Iowa, and it's because it's the first referendum for the presidential election. It's breathtaking when someone calls your wife and says, your husband ought to be made into a lampshade. It's breathtaking when someone excoriates your son. It's, you know, on the internet, there's no recourse. There's no responsibility. There's been a sense of piling on. All you need to do is type in Google, Jew Stephen Bloom, and you'll see some choice words about me.
The personal attacks are horrible. You know, there's just no defending that. But can you understand how people are hurt and angry by reading some of these characterizations, you know, toothless meth addicts, and they feel as if they've been name-called?
You know, there's a proud, long, hearty tradition in America that started with someone named Mark Twain, and it goes all the way through H.L. Mencken and Mike Royko and Hunter S. Thompson and Tom Wolfe and a whole bunch of other people who aren't afraid to base their writings on observations they make. You know, I talk about our dog. I don't know if you've read the whole
piece. Sure, yeah.
We've got a dog. When Hannah was younger, I would take her for a walk with my son, and I can't tell you how often guys in pickup trucks and some guys not in pickup trucks would stop and say, do you hunt that dog? Some guys would say, do you hunt that bitch? Where do you go hunting?
And so what? I mean, you know, people who
That's absolutely true. The point is that after The Atlantic came out, people are saying, that never happened to me. I don't think it could happen to Mr. Bloom.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah, there are tractor pulls. There are, you know, you can see signs for boar semen. The suicide rate is much higher than, interestingly, New York City in Iowa.
Over twice
as
high.
Yes. There is this brain drain. This is interesting stuff that never really gets reported by someone who lives and works and breathes Iowa every day. It's reported by parachuters who come in for 3 or 4 days. But I live there. And maybe because I live there, people are saying, well, you know, you ought to protect the place where you live. You know, this is where you work. You take some taxpayers' money. You can't do that. But that's not what journalists do. You know, the Iowa journalism that's out there, by and large, is what I call in my journalism classes booster journalism. It's community journalism. There is a financial incentive for the Iowa newspapers, for the Iowa media, not to rock the caucus boat. There are Brinks trucks that back up to newspapers, TVs, and radio stations and unload bags of money into the media-strapped coffers. This is big money. This is the jackpot every 4 years.
You don't question that.
Yeah. So, you know, you look at the Des Moines Register, you look at the Cedar Rapids Gazette, you look at the Quad City Times. These are ad sheets, and there are not many ads in them. They're pretty slender, thin newspapers. And so suddenly when you've got wealthy candidates who want to snare some votes, well, that's the way to do it. So you're not going to get a whole bunch of critical journalism from the state saying the caucuses shouldn't be in Iowa.
Again, Stephen Bloom, professor of journalism at the University of Iowa. Stephen, thanks so much. And by the way, you remind us, in speaking of the Grant Wood piece, one of my favorite political cartoons recently is that American Gothic couple standing there, but they've been plastered with Republican presidential candidate bumper stickers
yeah.
all over them. Stephen Bloom, thanks very much.
Thanks, Robin.